The first widely played video game wasn't Pong or Donkey Kong or Space Invaders. It wasn't made by Nintendo or Atari. Instead, imagine a bunch of scruffy young nerds at MIT in 1962, given free rein over the latest computer technology. The result? Space War. With an exclamation point. I'm Davis Donovan. This is Off the Path from WSHU Public Radio. We're back with Season 8, and our theme is origin stories, where it all began. And Space War began with a challenge.
It was a thing that a couple of staff members and students here in MIT decided to do while it was particularly snowy on a cold December, January in the 60s. These were a bunch of people who were bored, but also challenging each other to do something cool.
Philip Tan runs MIT's Game Lab in Cambridge, Massachusetts. He says many of the students and staff, mostly recent grads, were part of MIT's Model Railroad Club. In fact, the club was where the word hacker was coined. They hung out in a building they called the Plywood Palace,
which was itself kind of a ramshackle, leaky, cold, drafty building that was built in World War II in order to rapidly gather anybody who could possibly contribute to the effort of designing new radar into one building. But by the time the 60s came along, the Tech Model Railroad Club had a room with an entire working model railroad, and members who were working on that technology were also a number of them were also involved in sort of this early computing here on campus.
A company called the Digital Equipment Corporation, DEC, donated a shiny new computer to the university, a PDP-1. The company hoped something fun could be made to run on it. And if you've never seen an early computer, we're not exactly talking about a laptop you'd throw in your briefcase. Early computers were gigantic, but not this one.
They called it a mini computer because it didn't take up a whole room. It only took up, about a couple of desks.
The MIT crew also had a bunch of decommissioned circuits and switches and wires donated to the school by a phone company. Those phone parts turned into the game controllers.
So there's this long history of MIT students and staff using outdated technology to try to create new experiences, even before those same circuits were then repurposed and connected to computers.
It's almost like you're working with scraps, in a sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was absolutely scrappy.
The lead designer was Steve Russell, nicknamed Slug. He remembered the genesis in an interview decades later with Silicon Valley's Computer History Museum.
I started talking up the idea of having a spaceship trainer. Spaceships were very much in the news. It was abundantly clear that people didn't know how to fly spaceships very well. And eventually, the critical chorus at the Model Railroad Club and elsewhere said, "That's a great idea. Why don't you do it?" After talking it up for 8 weeks or so, I finally got shamed into writing code.
His idea for a spaceship training program morphed into an idea for a space game. You could maneuver spaceships, shoot lasers, crash into each other, and even get sucked into a vortex. One thing they needed was good visuals. That included a sky. MIT's Philip Tan says a student took that on.
Who didn't like the idea of the stars being entirely random when we have perfectly good star maps that could be encoded.
So he painstakingly recreated, through binary code, the night sky over Cambridge. And within that sky, they designed sleek, shiny rockets, or the best they could approximate with just a couple of pixels. Space Wars creators loved to read pulpy sci-fi paperbacks with titles like Galactic Patrol and The Vortex Blaster. They especially liked the work of E.E. Doc Smith, who wrote about spacemen who flew around the galaxy in just those kinds of futuristic spaceships.
And what a ship this little speedster was. Trim, trig, streamlined to the ultimate, she lay there, quiescent but surcharged with power. Almost sentient she was, this power-packed, ultra-racy little fabrication of space-toughened alloy, instantly ready at his touch to liberate those tremendous energies which were to hurl him through the infinite reaches of the cosmic void.
If you look at the science fiction novel covers of the 60s, you can see a direct lineage of what you're seeing on screen versus what those books look like.
The group spent months coding the game. By the spring of 1962, it was ready to go. And this is what showed up on the screen when they turned the game on. Two spaceships, like little dots, in a field of stars. They moved around and spun in circles and shot missiles at each other. There was a vortex in the middle of the screen that slowly pulled the spaceships in. The goal, of course, was to destroy the other spaceship and not get sucked into the vortex. Now, Space War was not the first video game ever created. For example, Brookhaven Labs on Long Island put out a demonstration of a tennis game in 1958. Blah, blah, standard historical disclaimer. But Space War was the first one intended to be played again and again just for fun. So it's arguably the most important precursor to modern video games. Students at MIT honored Space War's place in computer history about 10 years ago when they built a reproduction of the original game at MIT's Game Lab. The computer console is much smaller than the original, so it could squeeze into the corner of the lab's cluttered office. The controller has a couple of switches, like an old-timey phone board. MIT's Philip Tan flips a brass switch on the console, and two spaceships appear almost instantly. On the screen, super low-resolution versions of the kind of ships you might see on those sci-fi novel covers.
Okay, so what you're seeing on screen are colloquially described as the needle spaceship and the wedge spaceship. So we have a slightly diamond-shaped rocket and a long, thin Apollo-like rocket in space.
Two players pilot the spaceships and flip switches to shoot tiny projectiles at each other. In the middle of the screen is a mysterious object.
A flickering gravity well. It could be a star. It could be a black hole. It's up to you to interpret what that thing is. But all you really need to know is that it's going to suck these two spaceships into the center if they don't maneuver out of the way. At the same time, they can collide into each other, or they can shoot projectiles at each other.
Okay, so what am I doing?
So you push down on the right side to turn on your...
Okay, I'm going.
Your thruster.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I am not much of a gamer. Philip and I play a few rounds, but I can't quite get the hang of the controller.
Ah, gotcha. Nice. But then I immediately die.
Right.
So this is a high... Like, death is very quick in this game.
Yeah, so try turning 90 degrees.
Where to go? I don't seem to get like a lot of thrust from these rockets.
Right. So remember, you're changing your momentum, and so it takes a few seconds of
to
be able. My ship turns clunkily. I get caught in the black hole, and I can't seem to hit the other ship.
I think we're already seeing a little bit of the model railroad mentality on this. Is that they're really trying to duplicate how physics works.
Right.
So, yes, you cannot turn on a dime because that's not how zero-gravity orbital mechanics would work.
Wow.
Because physics works differently in space. You know, there's nothing to hold you down, and lighter objects are drawn to heavier objects. Now, that idea, to try to replicate real-life physics, it was a cornerstone of video game design. Space War became way more influential than any of those MIT folks ever imagined. But that's when we come back on Off the Path from WSHU Public Radio. I'm Davis Donovan.
WSHU has you covered. For the latest news and when you need to refresh with music. I'm Emily Boyer. Join me for inspiring sounds by artists who bring beauty into your day. Weekday mornings on 91.1 FM, 107.5 FM, and streaming online at WSHU.org and the WSHU app.
Welcome back. This is Off the Path. I'm Davis Donovan. So MIT debuted Space War at its summer open house in 1962. It was a hit, even though you needed a computer called a PDP-1 to play it. MIT's Philip Tan says DEC, the company that made the PDP-1, they couldn't have been happier.
The story goes, before a new DEC PDP-1 computer was shipped out to any location, they would run space war on it first, just to verify everything worked. Theoretically, the first thing that anybody would see when they plug in a brand new PDP-1 out of the shrink wrap, so to speak, would have been space war.
But there weren't many PDP-1s, or really any other computers at all, back then. Space war co-creator Peter Samson told the Computer History Museum it was pretty hard to get one.
Considering how few PDP-1s were sold, perhaps 50 of them made, the number of people who saw space war was high because so many of them went to universities.
Philip Tan says the game became a cult hit on college campuses at a moment when sci-fi was front and center in the public consciousness.
This is the same time when Star Trek is on TV. You know, we're talking about the 60s. It's in the air. You know, humans are trying to get to orbit and go to the moon, being fascinated about space travel, either in a science fiction sense or in a real practical sense. It's just in the air at the time.
Space War was the subject of the first ever video game tournament. 24 players competed against each other at Stanford University in Palo Alto in 1972. That same year, Rolling Stone magazine gave the game a bemused write-up in an article by hippie legend Stuart Brand called Fanatic Life and Symbolic Death Among the Computer Bums.
Reliably, at any nighttime moment in North America, hundreds of computer technicians are effectively out of their bodies, locked in life-or-death space combat, computer-projected onto cathode ray tube display screens for hours at a time, rooting their eyes, numbing their fingers in a frenzied mashing of control buttons, joyously slaying their friends, and wasting their employer's valuable computer time.
The game's creators didn't copyright the creation or charge anything for it. They gave the code away to anyone who asked. But other people saw the potential to make money. One was a guy named Nolan Bushnell, who ran an arcade in Utah. Philip Tan says Bushnell and a friend made an arcade game version called Computer Space in 1971, shortly before the Stanford tournament.
I forget whether that was before they renamed themselves Atari or after they renamed themselves.
That's right. A space war clone was the first endeavor for the company that would revolutionize early video games.
Computer Space, which is a beautiful Art Deco game cabinet, by the way. There's this voluptuous, contoured piece of art, sculpture, that ran this game. And they replaced a lot of the up and down switches with just buttons that you push.
The arcade version looked beautiful, but nobody wanted to play it.
This game was just too complicated. You needed to know about things like orbital mechanics.
The average player had a hard time figuring out the way objects move around each other in space with zero gravity. So Atari tried a simpler game, Pong.
And that had, what, three instructions? Insert coin, avoid missing ball for high score.
Pong seems like a real step down after Space War.
And a runaway success at the same time, right? I mean, you can play Pong with one hand, which is really good if the other hand has a beer or a cigarette in it. Pong would work in a bar where everyone is slightly drunk and maybe up for a challenge to against strangers. Computer Space, I think you need to be sober to play that or to play Space War.
But the ideas in Space War lived on. Remakes kept coming out through the 70s and the 80s, including more from Atari. The hit game Asteroids even drew from Space War's outer space physics. And Space War was one of the first games included for preservation in the Library of Congress in 2007. Today, MIT students in Cambridge, Massachusetts take lots of classes on game design. This class just learned about one of the basics behind any good game, decision making. Nicholas Petrozic majors in decision making, well, sort of.
6-4, better known as AI and decision making.
What do you mean 6-4? What's that mean?
Oh, that's the number. A lot of MIT students call their majors by numbers here.
Making choices is the bedrock of the oldest games in human history, like chess. To some of the biggest video games today.
Nowadays, a lot of games come up with a lot of pre-designated paths that you follow. Like, here are a set of choices I give to the player, and, you know, these are the five things they can do. But they don't think as much about, like, hey, what if we just leave this physics engine here and we figure let the players figure out what to do with it.
Older games could be a lot more challenging to play, but their designs were very simple, which made them more fun to play for hours. It was like pouring out a box of building blocks on the floor.
In other words, the idea that you sort of place a bunch of components and parts at a player's feet, and you let them figure out how to use them.
How do we take these physical laws that we see in reality and reproduce them digitally?
Philip Tan says Space War's biggest legacy is the way video games still play in the sandbox of real world or real outer space physics.
All the way to how hair moves on computer characters nowadays, to how sound propagates through a space, for instance. We can do so much more computation within a fraction of a second, and that just goes to give us either a more entertaining or a more strategic challenge. In some cases, we're dealing with physical phenomena and we have to anticipate what will happen based on our knowledge in the real world. And in some cases, just gives us something pretty for us to look at, you know, like the way how light spreads through a space. And that constantly is improving with some diminishing returns, I think.
In the end, you might not need to improve much beyond two little spaceships floating around in a field of stars. This is Off the Path from WSHU Public Radio. I'm Davis Donovan.